Max, did you see all the awesome things up on Patreon this week on the behind the scenes blog?
No.
It's great.
What's there?
Me being silly and ridiculous and making mistakes.
Bloopers?
Bloopers.
I love bloopers.
Honest to goodness, how many times do you watch a blooper reel for a movie? Like 70 times.
Constantly. Yeah.
It's actually the best way to cheer yourself up on a sad day.
Oh, yeah. Especially the Parks and Rec ones.
Have you seen the one where Amy Poehler, it takes her like 27 times to say that one line?
Which one? I've watched all of them constantly, so probably.
Whatever season when Ben first gets there and she's trying to introduce her Ben to her mom, and the line is just something
Oh, and
like,
she just keeps
and
laughing.
she
She
just
can't do it.
can't
Yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
She just can't.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Fantastic. What's the website?
Patreon.com/UrsulaMajor. You know how much it costs?
How much?
Not that much. Like $4.
How, wait, $4 a day? $4 a week?
$4 a month
A month.
if you wanted.
So I could give $1 a podcast.
Yep.
I could give $5 a podcast.
You could give me $100 a podcast.
Patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Hello.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to
The
The Bitchery
Bitchery
of
of
History.
History.
My name's Max.
I'm Allison. This week I am going to be talking about Edith Norse Rogers.
Oh, I love a woman with three names. And I'm doing Queen Suriothi of Siam.
Nice.
So tell me about her.
Edith Norse Rogers was the sixth woman elected to Congress. She had an
Yes.
amazing political career.
Uh-huh.
You're gonna just fall in love
I love
right now.
politics.
Honest to goodness, this woman is your grandma. Like, you're a
Yes.
hero. You're gonna love it.
Okay.
So she was born in Maine on March 19th, 1881. She was just one of two children. Her father worked in a textile plant. Her father was an affluent textile plant magnate. You know, he owned a lot of things.
Sure.
And her mother was Edith Frances Riversmith. She went to a private school at Rogers High School, which was a boarding school in Massachusetts. She
Okay.
actually finished her education in Paris, France. She returned to America in 1907 and married Jacob Rogers, who was a lawyer from Harvard. They settled in Lowell, Massachusetts. And in 1912, John, her husband, was elected as the Republican to the 63rd Congress and was successfully reelected to the House for succeeding terms. He
Wow.
served as ranking majority member on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He authored the 1924 Rogers Act, which recognized and modernized the U.S. diplomatic corps.
Oh, cool.
So during World War I, Edith inspected field hospitals with the organization Women's Overseas Service League, and she often talked about her experience, saying, "No one could see the wounded and dying as I saw them and not be moved to do all in his or her power to help."
Wow.
Her husband served in the war until November 29th, 1918, when he was honorably discharged.
Fantastic.
In 1918, she had joined the American Red Cross volunteer group in DC and worked with hospitalized veterans. She earned the name Angel of Walter Reed Hospital. There were several angels of
Oh,
Walter Reed
okay.
Hospitals. After the war, three consecutive presidents, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover, appointed Edith as their personal ombudsman,
Ombudsman, yeah.
which means she was personally charged with investigating individuals' complaints against maladministration, and she was working with disabled
Oh,
veterans and going
wow.
and investigating their cases. Three presidents all made
Wow.
her the
They
point
trusted her
person
enough
to
to
do
do that.
this.
Yeah.
She also continued working in her husband's congressional offices in Lowell, Massachusetts, and in Washington. And Congressman Rogers actually considered Edith his chief advisors on policies and campaign
Oh,
strategy.
wow. That's great.
So, of course, on March 28th, 1925, when John Rogers died from cancer, Edith waited 1 week to declare her plan to run for his seat.
You gotta be courteous.
Her Republican competition was James Grimes, who was a former Massachusetts senator who ran on a platform of prohibition and law and order. She beat him 13,086 votes to 1,939.
Oh my God. That's like, a landslide. No, if I ever saw one.
Zero competition. Like, there is no contest.
By 12,000 votes. In a in a race that had like 14,000 votes.
Yeah. Yep. Her Democratic competition for the special election was Eugene N. Foss of Boston, who was actually a former governor.
Oh, wow.
She won 72% of the vote. So once again,
she could not have been elected with a bigger mandate or with a bigger portion.
And then she said in the aftermath of that win, quote, "I hope that everyone will forget that I am a woman as soon as possible," end quote, which is both badass and heartbreaking.
I just got chills, but also I agree.
It's both, but I mean, it's 1928. What are you going to do? She was reelected to the House the next 17 times by large margins. This was partly due to her charisma, her sense of humor, and the fact that she worked 18-hour days, leading the press to call her the busiest woman on Capitol Hill.
I'm in love already.
I know you are.
Tell me there's more.
Her trademark, you'll love this. Uh-huh. Her trademark was wearing an orchid or a gardenia on her shoulder. She was never seriously challenged during her 18 consecutive terms. And in 1950, on the 25th anniversary of her first election, other members of the GOP hailed her as the First Lady of the Republican Party. When she was first elected, she didn't inherit her husband's former committee appointments and instead received the assignments of expenditures in the Navy Department, industrial arts and expositions, women's suffrage, and World War veterans legislation.
Okay.
Later, she dropped the first three of those committees and won seats on the Civil Service and Indian Affairs panel.
Okay.
She won back her husband's seat on the Foreign Affairs Committee in the 73rd Congress. That's 1933 to 1935.
Mm-hmm.
And soon after, she began addressing the Committee on the Dangers of Fascism in Nazi Germany and in Italy.
Mm.
She was one of the first members of Congress to denounce Nazi policies. In 1937, she actually broke her party ties by voting against the Neutrality Act. In 1940, she crossed party lines again to vote for the Selective Service Act, which would create the nation's first peacetime draft.
Mm-hmm.
She rose to the number two ranking minority member post on the Foreign Affairs Committee before she retired from the committee in 1946. In 1939, Rogers joined with Democratic Senator Robert Wagner of New York to co-sponsor a measure to increase the quota of Jewish immigrants in an effort to help rescue Jewish children escape Nazi persecution.
Oh, I think I've heard of her before.
The bill was called the Wagner-Rogers Bill and was introduced to the Senate on February 9th, 1939, and to the House on February 14th. It would have allowed 20,000 German-Jewish refugees under the age of 14 to settle in the U.S.
I didn't know this was her. I've heard of this.
Yeah. It didn't pass,
though.
People who supported it were religious and later groups in the news media. Those opposed were patriotic groups who believed that charity begins at home.
Right.
We're looking at you, America.
Mm-hmm. Her story is very prescient to this day.
Truly. In May 1941, Rogers introduced the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps Act to create a voluntary enrollment program for women to join the Army in a non-combat capacity.
Okay.
She sponsored a package of measures to help protect veterans that would later be dubbed the GI Bill of Rights.
Yes. Oh.
Which passed in 1944. This bill most famously including, you know, tuition for college, post-service, and low-interest mortgage loans.
That was her?
Mm-hmm. She helped extend this bill to include Korean War veterans in 1952. She also proposed the creation of a cabinet-level Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
While this wasn't adopted in her lifetime, it was officially created in 1989.
Yeah.
The American Legion conferred upon Rogers its Distinguished Service Cross for her work with veterans. She was the first person to receive the award. After the war, she embraced the anti-communism ideology that swept the nation. She made public addresses and floor speeches on the subject. She did support the investigations of the House Committee on Un-American Activities.
Mm-hmm. McCarthy.
And urged the U.S. to withdraw from the U.N. if China were admitted. So,
all right,
she stayed true to herself.
Right.
You know, hindsight is 2020. In 1958, Rogers was mentioned as a challenger against a Democratic runner you might have heard of, John F. Kennedy of Massachusetts.
Oh.
Many people believe she was the only Republican that would be able to defeat him, but she was 77 at the time and declined the opportunity.
Yeah.
3 days before the primary of the 87th Congress in 1961, Congresswoman Rogers died of pneumonia in a Boston hospital. Oh. Until 2012, she was the longest serving congresswoman in U.S. history.
Wow.
And there is currently a veterans hospital in Bedford, Massachusetts, named in Edith's honor, the Edith Norse Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital. Are I'm you
obsessed.
In love?
Obsessed.
Are you in love? I love. I knew you would love her.
If only you guys could see the movement Allison just made.
Maybe one day you will on the Patreon blog.
Yes, I absolutely adore her. I am everything about politics. I love it. And I love strong women, so I'm there for it. Okay, so Queen Suriothi of Siam. Now, I'm going to preface this story by saying there's a lot of very difficult names in this story, and I'm going to do my best.
I'm right there with you.
Okay. It does bear saying that her story is oral. So it is not really written down. The parts of her life that we have are all passed down through oral traditions until much later after she passed away.
Variations on the text.
Exactly, yes. So there's a lot of different stories. So what we do know for sure is the name of her husband, who was King Chakrafat, who ruled in Siam from 1548 to 1564.
Okay.
And then again briefly in 1569. So her story, we know, takes place in the mid-1500s in Siam, which is now known as Thailand. So the most popular story of her that exists explains that she was a minor of royal rank who was in love with another prince, but was married to the future king Maha Chakrapat. This story sticks because it highlights how dutiful she was to her king, even though she was in love with someone else.
Wow.
During this period, the Kingdom of Siam or Kingdom of Ayutthaya, both names are used interchangeably because Ayutthaya was the capital city of Siam, was the dominant power in Southeast Asia. At its peak, this was a rule over what is today Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, parts of southern China, northern Malaysia, and eastern Burma. Vietnam was also in its own political turmoil as it was facing a dynasty shift, so Burma proved to be the greatest rival to Siam during this time. Before her husband even came to the throne, Suriothai gave him apt advice that probably ended up saving his life. He was known as Prince Thianraka before becoming King Chakrafat, and his uncle was currently King Yadfa, so the king at the time.
Mm-hmm.
However, Yadfa's mother, Queen Sudachan, was the queen regent and was actually the one who held power at the time. Even when they're not officially there. It is believed that she conspired to have her own son, King Yadfa, killed so that she could put her lover on the throne, King Khun Warwaunsithrat. After he took the throne, Prince Thianraka was named co-regent, but Suriothai suspected the queen wanted to kill him as well. She persuaded her husband to enter a Buddhist monastery where he could not be assassinated. A palace coup later took down King Khun and installed Prince Thianraka, now Maha Chakrapat, as the king. The turnover in Siam put in a weakened and vulnerable position against the unified and growing forces in Burma.
Ooh.
So what we have is there's a king in power. His mother wants to kill him to put her lover into power.
It's a bad mom.
He gets placed. Suriothai's husband, the king, gets also named as co-regent. So the same power as the king. But she has him go to the monastery because they're not going to kill him in a monastery. The plan to take down the king goes through, and instead of the lover being put into place, because he's still a king, he's still the co-regent, he just gets placed as the full king.
Wow.
But because of all the political turmoil, they're now at a disadvantage to Burma, who's like really building up at this time. So the king of Burma divided his army into three columns, and the viceroy of Prom was leading one of these columns into Siam. Siamese troops were fierce in their resistance, but the Burmese troops were larger and the Siamese were outmatched, and they were forced to retreat to the capital. King Chakrafat led his army into battle against Burmese troops on the back of an elephant, taking his two sons with him. Suriothai, though, who feared for her family's safety, dressed as a male soldier and rode into the conflict on the back of another elephant.
Get it, girl.
There are also accounts that their daughter joined them as well. Also yes. dressed as a male
yes,
soldier.
Yes, the daughter did. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I wasn't there, but I'm saying yes. That's the scene I want to see.
As was the custom in these battles, the Siamese king and viceroy charged in front of their armies to fight each other one-on-one. The king's elephant stumbled during the battle and put him at risk of being struck by his opponent's blade. But in the moment, Queen Suriyothai charged in front of him in an effort to deflect the blow, was hit herself, cutting her shoulder and chest open, and it killed her.
Self-sacrifice for your country. Wowza. Yeah,
exactly. King Chakrafat rallied his soldiers, and they were able to hold off the Burmese long enough to withdraw back to Ayutthaya. He eventually died fighting to gain control of Siam back from the Burmese. After all of this, Queen Suriyothai went down in Thai history as a figure of determination and self-sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Her husband built a stupa for her, and there is currently a large monument in her honor near the capital city of, near the old capital of Ayutthaya, featuring the queen riding on the back of a large elephant charging into battle.
I want to see it.
I do too. Her story actually was sustained by the royal family to sustain a spirit of nationalism after the absolute monarchy fell in 1932. One of the military coup leaders who helped tackle the monarchy, Phibun Songkram, promoted a number of historic monuments to provoke a sense of patriotism. His wife actually went so far as to establish a women's club and use Suriyothai as their symbol. A lot of the dates surrounding the birth, life, and death of her are in debate. So some scholars are unsure about the story's accuracy, of course. There is one historian who actually doesn't believe that this happened at all. They think that the battle was fought by a 16-year-old princess named Fra Boromdilok. Either way, she's a strong symbol of national pride for Thailand. And there's actually a historical film made about her. It's called The Legend of Suriyothai in 2001. And at the time, it was the most expensive Thai film ever made. I don't think so.
I want to see it.
But we'll find it.
I want to see it.
We'll find
but
it.
But I also want to say to this historian who is going, poo-poo, I don't think that ever happened. You're only making it more awesome if it's a 16-year-old girl.
That's true.
You're not...
It doesn't take anything away from it.
It takes zero away from the story, and it almost makes it better. What if the 16-year-old girl, that was her daughter, and like the mom is already gets hit by something, and then the daughter... I'm just... Wow. It's great.
Yeah, so whether she was real or not, whether that story really happened, she does stand as a national symbol to this day. And it's a story that the people of Thailand believe and hold true in their hearts. So be that as it may.
I'm going to keep it as true.
Me too.
The Bitchery of History is brought to you by Audible.com.
You can get a free audiobook and start a free trial by going to audibletrial.com/bitchery.
This week, I'm going to recommend The Princess Diarist by Carrie Fisher.
Oh, rest in peace.
Because it's read by Carrie Fisher. So if you're missing Carrie Fisher and you need a reminder that a woman's place is in the resistance, download that.
Yes. So you can get that book and thousands of others at audibletrial.com/bitchery.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you are enjoying the podcast, can you do me a super quick favor? Whatever platform you're listening on right now, Google Play, Stitcher, Podomatic, iTunes, just take a second and give us a rating or a review. Those ratings and reviews help other people find the show, which helps us keep doing the show. Thanks.
All right, so today in herstory, April 9th, 1939, Marian Anderson, an African-American contralto and world-renowned singer, sings an Easter Sunday concert on the Lincoln Memorial for more than 75,000 people in a radio audience of millions.
Love it. On April 13th, 1933, Ruth Bryan Owen becomes the first woman to represent the U.S. as a foreign minister when she is appointed as an envoy to Denmark.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. I like it. This week, the term I thought we should discuss and define a little bit is glass ceiling. It's actually, okay. It seems to me it's a pretty well-known and frequently used term. It's really become part of the conversation, I would say, since a few years back. Right around when Hillary Clinton started running, I would say, is when I started hearing it more frequently, more than in just kind of a scholarly discussion.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wanted to define it. And the idea, of course, being that in any system, whether it's a corporate office, whether it's on a film set in Hollywood, whether it's the political system of our country, women can only move so high, and then they are stopped by an invisible force, a right. glass ceiling. You can't see it, but you can feel it. You can feel that there's no longer any upward momentum.
Right.
So when we talk about shattering a glass ceiling, it's saying you've hit that barrier and you've forced your way through it.
Right. It is a verifiable phenomenon. Like, you can see it happening.
Absolutely.
You look at the percentage of female executives in Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. Look at people in the highest stations of government. Look mm-hmm. at people in the highest stations of the military.
Yep.
Look in literally every single, well, pretty much every single facet
even
of
society. Higher education.
Absolutely.
You know, how many women are tenured professors?
Absolutely.
Versus their male counterparts. All of those things.
One of our causes last week was we were talking about Girls Who Code. And mm-hmm. Girls Who Code talks about how the
yeah.
percentage of people who, the percentage of women who are coding has been declining.
Yes.
And so you look at Silicon Valley. Who are the, like, the people running the Silicon Valley right now? Mm-hmm. We have Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, right? Rest in peace. Steve Wozniak. Yeah. All these big, high men who are doing mm-hmm. great things. But at the same time, where are the women?
Sheryl Sandberg.
Probably, that's true.
Probably the only one.
Yeah.
That I can name.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I will say I've been watching Iron Fist on Netflix.
Yeah.
Because I'm a nerd and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But people have even talked, and it's kind of part of the Bechdel test as well, you know, in when you're hiring extras, make sure half your extras are women. I mean, half of society is women.
Right.
And there are a lot of scenes that take place in the corporate boardroom of this giant corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was noticing that probably half or at least a good third of the members of the board are women, older women or women of a senior position,
right.
clearly, who are on the board. And I just was like, yeah, go yeah. Marvel. Of course.
You know, I think we have to, in talking about the glass ceiling, it is worth talking about how that this is a societal problem. This is a mm-hmm. thing that has come and gone. So the glass ceiling kind of shifts for various people. It's not just something that affects women, right? So there's a glass ceiling for African Americans. There's a glass
Absolutely.
Ceiling for the queer movement. There's a glass ceilings kind of all over the place. And those glass ceilings have shifted from culture to culture. And even today, in today's mm-hmm. time, they shift from culture to culture. I mean,
and sometimes they just move a little bit, but they don't totally break.
True.
Or sometimes they break, but then they get rebuilt.
Yeah.
You have people like Edith Rogers who break through and become an amazing congresswoman, but we still don't have even a 50-50 Congress of men and women.
Not
so
even close to parity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is really worth thinking, like, this is something that is socially constructed, almost like gender is socially mm-hmm. constructed or sexuality is socially constructed. This is something that is fixable. This is something that is, you know, through education, through knowledge, reaching out to people and just saying, look, we need to actively make the decision to hire more women. It's what Justin Trudeau did with his cabinet.
The sexiest man alive.
Literally one of the most attractive people on the earth today.
Those Canadians, man.
They sure know how to elect them.
They know how to
grow Oh, well,
up.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
What's our cause this week?
Our cause this week is Holla Back. It is a nonprofit and a movement to end street harassment. Started in 2011.
Yes. Everything I want. Tell me more.
Started in 2011, Holla Back works with local activists in 92 cities and 32 countries across the world to educate communities about what street harassment is, why women are targets of street harassment, and to come up with solutions that ensure equal access to public spaces. You can use the Holla Back website at ihollaback.org to share your experiences of street harassment and map the places where you experience street harassment.
Why do I not know about this? I need this.
ihollaback.org.
I need yep. this. I have several things to post, unfortunately. And also, I just want to host an event.
Let's do it. Bitchery of History hosts.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody recently because I run in the mornings, right. And I usually run when it's dark.
Yeah.
And I am safe, and I run with pepper spray, and I change my route, and blah, 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 which I really, that's another conversation that I shouldn't have to do that.
Right. We've had that conversation on the podcast.
But three times recently when I've been running in different areas around my apartment, which is a safe neighborhood, Max. Yeah. I don't live in a bad area.
You do not.
And even if I go to somewhere that's like a little less good than right on my street, I'm not in South Central.
You're not close to it. Like I'm in K-Town, so I'm closer to it than you are.
Exactly. Yeah. But I have had men who are awake at 5:30 in the morning out, you know, going
doing
whatever they need to do. Three separate men on three separate days have said to me as I've run past, "You better watch out. This isn't safe. That isn't safe. You can't run here. That's not safe. This isn't safe." And I'm just want to look at them and go, I have my pepper spray. I don't have headphones in. I change my route every day. Leave me the F alone. I'm a citizen of this country. I pay my taxes to have these sidewalks.
Right.
I will run where I please. So, yeah, I need this website. I want to report all of those.
iHollaBack.org.
Love it.
All right. So, The Bitchery of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions.
You can find us on Facebook. Our page is just called The Bitchery of History, but you can also go to facebook.com/umpboh. That is our social media handle on Twitter and Instagram as well, @umpboh.
Yes.
We've got an amazing website, umpboh.com. Check it out.
I'd also like to give a shout out to our production team, Ashley, Kim, Jeanette, and Sydney, our webmaster.
You guys are boss-ass bitches.
You guys are absolutely amazing.
As a friendly reminder, if you want more behind-the-scenes info, more about our women, more about Max and myself, or just want to hear some silly bloopers, you can find all of that at patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Yes. And as always, bitches get stuff done.